Okay, so I'm Sean.
I'm Megan.
We're doing a podcast.
Yes, we are.
Called Help Me Understand.
Help Me Understand.
And the last time I was here, last time I was here was last week, and both of us didn't do anything.
That's true.
The time before that, that I was here, you were discovering like diapers or jumpers that your son was hiding around the house.
Oh yes, I might have I have a 4-year-old and he's potty trained, but he still has accidents at night. So we have him in these, they're called pull ups, and he's supposed to throw them in the garbage, and he's very good at doing it, which tells me that when he starts hiding them around the house, it's an intentional thing. Like, and I said, "Hey, did you throw away your pull-up?" He's like, "Yeah, I did." I said, "Where is your pull-up?" He's like, "I threw it in the garbage." And I'm like, "I know that you're lying to me. You're lying to me because I'm looking at the garbage. There is no pull-up here."
I just like that it's such a great mom thing. Like it's a rhetorical question.
It's true.
Like, you're totally setting him up. Like,
it's true. That's true. I'm daring him to lie to me. And he does. And then I find it behind the couch. And I'm like, how many of these are stashed around the house? Like, am I going to discover them and be sad? That was true.
Oh, it's just funny. I had to do a talk last night about parenting, and kids came up. And I was getting asked about it. Because Jen, my wife, we don't really have like a child talk. Like, I don't know. Did you have like a talk with your husband? Like, was there any point like you just were like, so we should talk about if we're going to have kids or?
Sure. We had several talks.
So you had multiple over time?
Yeah, yeah.
See, Jen and I don't have talks. What happens is like I get home and there's a pile of books on the dinner table. and they're from the library. And so I start flipping through them and I'll be like, oh, a Vonnegut book. Great. Short stories. Maybe I'll read this before I go to bed. And, oh, Jen got herself a new mystery novel. And what to expect when you're expecting, which then leaves you with lots of questions. So then I find myself waiting for Jen to get home to say, what exactly are we expecting? I found the book.
Because I wasn't expecting this book.
I wasn't expecting the Vonnegut either. So, like, I'm not getting mad or surprised. It's horrible that mad would be the first thing I'm thinking. Like, what's going on in there?
How dare you conceive?
You conceived a baby? Better answer me. But it does become this thing where I'm like, I'm not expecting a child.
No.
And I think have the most stereotypical responses to it anyway, is that Jen will be like, so it's so passive aggressive on my part, and I don't know why, because then it'll be like, well, you know, Jen's a little bit older than me, and she's like, well, you know, I think if we're going to have kids, we're going to have to do it soon. And I'm like, okay, absolutely. And she's like, so when? And I'm like, I'm not sure. I agree with soon. Soon sounds good. Let's leave it at that. I'm going to play a video game. And then I usually leave the room. This is basically how it goes.
That's good. How's that working for you?
I imagine for Jen it's frustrating, but I've racked up a lot of yards in Madden football.
That's well. All right. That's good.
I've done really well on that game.
That's good. This is our first episode of our new podcast, Help Me Understand. And let's take a minute to tell our listener, single.
The one listener. It's my mom. Yeah,
it's my mom. So we have two.
Two moms.
Hi, moms. Who we are and what... Who do we think we are? So, Sean, who do you think you are? How dare you?
This is an existential question I deal with every day. I'm Sean Lewis. I live in Iowa City, Iowa. And I write plays, which no one cares about. And that's about it. That's about all. I do something every day that basically no one cares about.
Not true. Not
true. So I'm, the two people are out there, one of them I know doesn't actually care about plays.
Your mother's not a fan of your work.
Basically, at this point, I'm aware that I'm only reaching half of the audience at best.
That is sad.
And you're an educator and playwright?
I am. I'm a playwright, and my name is Megan, and I also, coincidentally, freakily, also live in Iowa City. Iowa, so we happen to be in the same town.
Makes the podcasting easier.
Yeah, Sean and I have many things in common. Let's list them. We live in Iowa City.
True.
We are playwrights.
True.
I
don't have kids.
No.
I see kids, though.
You do?
We've seen kids.
I don't know if that counts. I don't know if that counts.
We both went to the University of Iowa at different points.
We both went to the University of Iowa at different points. We're both white people.
We are white people. Very white, actually.
Let's.
I'm almost translucent.
We have some Irish claims. Irish.
Your family's pretty Irish?
Well, Gogarty. Gogarty is a pretty Irish name.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, most of my family is bastards and half-breeds, but there is an Irish veneer of Gogarty. It's an Irish name.
How many generations removed?
Oh, God knows. We're all like, I think I might be his kid. Like, it's like that. But the strongest...
I like the idea of your entire family not completely sure whose kid they are.
We don't really know.
That guy looks similar.
He might be. That's what it is. The strongest sort of, like, bloodline, though, is Norwegian. My grandmother was Norwegian. And her parents, like, off the boat, Norwegian. Like, straight up crazy Norwegian. So there's, like, I'm a quarter...
What's crazy Norwegian?
Just like really, like I'm from Norway, like actually Norwegian. Do you know what I mean? Like you say I'm Irish, but you're not actually from Ireland.
No, but my whole family's and they get really mad whenever I say I'm not from. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 Thanksgivings ago. I think I dared to say at a Thanksgiving dinner that I didn't feel Irish in a sense, and I didn't mean like. I guess I did mean in heritage, but I lied at the time and told them I did not mean in heritage. But I was basically saying, like, I'm American. Like, I grew up in New York. I like the Mets, and I watch football more than I should. Like, none of these traits seem like I am, you know, from the Blarney Stone.
Huh.
They were not happy at all.
And they got really upset.
Oh, God. And it's hard, too, because none of them are from Ireland. Like, like it's like all my uncles who were, like, born in Jersey. And I'm like, you're not from Ireland. You're from, like... Patterson. Like, what are you talking about? And they're like, oh, you can't deny your culture. And I'm like, what culture? Like, we're eating turkey. Later on, we're going to, like, have a hot dog at night when we're hung. Why would we eat a hot dog on Thanksgiving?
Because sometimes you get tired of the poultry. You need a change of pace.
It's just constantly, I'm like, I don't understand this weird obsession that they have with it. Because there is a pretty big obsession in our family with being Irish.
Yeah. We were too. We went through that. I had been told as a child that the name Gogarty came from 3 brothers named O'Gogarty, who came over during the Irish potato famine and dropped the O due to racial prejudice, as you do. And so this is what I was told. And then we found out through some genealogy that actually that's not true, that the name, that we're a bunch of bastards and half-breeds, and the name Gogarty came from some guy named Bernard Gogarty, who came over from France.
I was hoping it was something like that. Like, that you really was just, you were Dutch. You know? Yeah. It was like...
Yeah. And we think that he came from France from Ireland, because there's, like, a Castle Gogarty in Ireland, and there's, there's some context clues that point Irish, but, like, our guy came from France. Like, which is such a blow. Like, if you're so proud of being Irish, and then it's like, oh, no. You're from France. You're like, it's just such a shame.
I know, it takes away the drinking and just gives you cheese.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's funny, because when you were saying you were really Norwegian, the only thing I know about Norway is, like, that they have, like, obsessive, like, death metal. Like,
I didn't know this about Norway.
Oh, yeah. For some reason, I got really caught up with this, and the Netherlands in general, that there's this, like, huge black metal, like, death metal movement, and the bands are insane. Like, they're super crazy. Like, I don't know how I first found out about it, but there was, like, this one band. There's a documentary about them where one of the guys in the band killed his bandmate and then, like, ate his heart on stage. This is a family-friendly show.
My God!
Yeah. Like, and as things do, like, of course they became a much more popular band. Like,
well, naturally. That's what we should do for our podcast, I think, is one of us should kill the other and then eat the heart. On the microphone.
On mic.
And they'd be like, what's that sound? Oh, it's just me munching some heart.
It'll be really bad for one of those audience members.
That's true.
Or maybe both. I guess it'd be really bad.
Oh, no, it'd be bad for one of us. It's like,
really
it's
bad for us.
Two podcasters enter, one podcaster leaves.
It's a Mortal Kombat of it.
That's true. Okay, so here's another question, Sean, for our listeners. Who do you think could win in a fight between the two of us?
I'd say you. You got 2 kids.
But you have much more strong muscles.
Yeah, but I gave up a long time ago. I think I just gave up.
No, you gave up being strong or gave up winning fights?
Both.
I don't know. You're scrap. I think you're a scrapper.
I don't know. I spend all of my time with a dog who bosses me around.
Oh,
so,
dear.
No, I don't think I would do well. I imagine kids, they keep you on your toes. They're running around. They yell a lot.
They do. Well, I have a lot of suppressed rage, so that would add...
I would imagine
that would help me in my...
Just from the kids? Or
just,
is,
well...
Is it, that, like, life?
That's just life. But, the, you know, the I have a special pocket of rage just for the kids. It's like,
is
that's
that
part
an
of
Irish
it.
Thing? My family has a lot of suppressed rage.
Maybe. Maybe. Like maybe that's our purest... our purest...
The purest quality of the Irish.
Quality of the Irish is our the suppressed rage.
It's funny, I did. I was doing a show. This just reminds me of this. I was doing a show in New York last January, and there was no housing. It's gonna come to. It's gonna come back around to the Irish at
okay.
some point. There was no housing, and so I made this ridiculous deal with the theater where I was like, "Oh, I'll just like sleep in your offices." So like, I would rehearse, perform at night, and then after the offices cleared out at night, I brought a sleeping bag and I was just gonna sleep in their office. I'm a grown man at this point. It's depressing. But and they were like, oh, that's fine, that's fine. So, which I should have known, anybody who agrees to that, who's a good business person, like, it's not fine. Like, there's no way anyone lets you do that. So I came down to do all this. We'd set it all up. And I met up with the artistic director who was at this theater. And I was like, great. So I brought my sleeping bag, which is a really weird conversation to have with an artistic director. He was like, great. He's just so you know, there's going to be somebody else staying here with you tonight. Which, totally, this guy's right, but it is a weird thing. So you start going, like, multiple people are staying in the office of this theater in New York City. And so the way he described it to me, he's like, yeah, there's this this actor. The theater had done an Irish theater festival. And there was an actor from Ireland who he had been in a couple of movies over in Ireland, and he did really well in this play that they were doing for the first Irish Fest, and so he stuck around, and they were helping him out. They really enjoyed his work, and so they were like, it just seems like if they enjoyed your work at this theater, they were like, fine, live,
stay in
yeah,
our office,
sleep on the scanner, like, go crazy. And so they did that. They let us stay, and you know, I went and I rehearsed, and it was like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and nothing to do, broke and uptown Manhattan, bemoaning my life, thinking that this is where I'm at this point. And I rolled out the sleeping bag and was like, I'll just go to sleep early. And whenever this guy shows up to sleep, that'll be fine, I guess. And I was just about to go to sleep, and the guy shows up. And so opened the door, I talked to him for a little bit, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to bed. And he's like, I'm just going to sleep in the theater. They were right across from each other. So he goes in the theater, and then like an hour goes by. Like, big knocking on the door. And it startles me, you know, like, I just started to fall asleep, so I'm all groggy. I get up and I open the door and I'm like, oh, hey, Declan, what's up? What do you need? And he was just like, I need your phone. I'm like, okay. He's like, I just need your phone. I think I work at this place and the guys there are bad. I think there's someone after me. And I'm like, wait, you think you work at a place where guys are bad and there's people after you? And so I'm like, okay, I give him the phone. And he's like, thanks. It's no big deal. Don't worry. I'll give it back. And so he comes back, gives me the phone again. And I try to go back to sleep, and then knock on the door again. He's like, I need the phone again. I need the phone. I'm like, okay. So I give him the phone. He does this one more time. And then the third time he gives it back to me. And I'm like, it's funny because I was trying to give him like his privacy before, like I won't bother you while you're on my phone,
uh-huh.
you know, and all this. And I wasn't looking at like where he called. For some reason, I was like, I should be polite, not worry about like if he's calling Long Island or whatnot. And cell phones, so I'm like, long distance doesn't matter. But I'm looking at it, and there's like international phone calls. Like he's calling. It's got the codes in the front. Like
uh-huh.
I think Ireland's like 011 or something. So he has that, and now I'm like, okay, I don't really want a $700 like charge on my phone. And then he knocks again, and I'm like, okay, what's going on? He's like, do you mind if I sleep in here? Can you sleep in the theater? And I'm like, I don't understand. He's like, I think some guys from my job. He eventually tells me he works at this like bar, like in Hell's Kitchen, and he's like, it's really shady and it's bad and there's dangerous people. And I'm like, so I'm naturally terrified of the world. So the more he tells me stuff, more I'm like, my mind's going all over the place, and I'm like, I feel like I'm gonna be in some really crappy 70s movie soon where I'm like running through the street. Like,
so he wants you to sleep in the theater.
Yes, he wants me as a decoy.
Yeah.
It's like a decoy. And I'm trying to parcel this out. Like, it's funny, like the way you asked your son, like, did you throw it out? And you know that he didn't. Like, yeah. I'm asking questions going like, you want me to stay in there so that they think I'm like, I know that's why he wants me to do it. But like, for some reason I need him to say it. And I'm also weirdly polite enough that I'm even considering it. Like, I'm like, maybe I should sleep in the theater and that'll be good. And he's just like, just trade with me and stay. And at this point I'm like, yeah. So finally I'm just like, yeah, sure. I'll do that. I just want to gather up my stuff. Just give me a second. I want to get changed. And he was like, oh, great. Thanks, Sean. Thanks. And he leaves. And I just like hurriedly just start throwing everything I own into bags, you know, and I start to leave. And he's really funny. Life is just so strange, you know, because I try and write life and I know that I fail at it all the time. Basically because of experiences like this where I'm like, oh, that's how life works out. It's not like how I wrote it. And so, like, as I'm leaving, he stops me. And he's like, you're leaving. Are you leaving? I'm like, yeah. You told me people were coming here to, like possibly kill you. I'm going to go. And he's like, oh. He's like, I feel really bad. Should I give you some money? I'll give you some money. You can go to a hotel. And I'm like, why don't you go to a hotel? You should go to the hotel. Don't worry about it. I'm just going to go. And it's late at this point. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. And he's like, and then this is where I'm like, life is so much strange. He's like, you got a show coming up, don't you? Here. You're doing a show here. And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing a show. What's the name of the show? And I'm like, Killadelphia. And he's like, when's it open? I'm like, I'm sorry, you're asking me, do you want to make a reservation? Like we've just parceled out that you've been tracked home by vicious Irish mobsters who want to kill you. You've asked me to stay in another room, put myself at risk as a decoy for your safety. And now, as you find out I'm leaving, to make it's like he's trying to be polite. Right. Nice. Like, it became this very weird, it made me think about my own family as like, you know, we're all Irish, and I think there's a level of, like, wanting to make people feel comfortable.
Mm.
And it was, like, this weird thing where he was like, oh, I made you feel really uncomfortable. Let's talk about your show. Like, let's do that, and that'll make us, you won't think but I'm a bad guy.
The clock is ticking. The clock is ticking.
For me, the clock's going crazy. I'm just going, like, I don't know, you know, because at that point, it's an old building, like, all the buildings in New York, like, everything's really tight, so every noise, I'm just like, I'm gonna get out of here. Like, I've gotta go.
The Irish mob.
Yeah, the Irish mob is gonna murder me, and all I wanted to do was sleep in a sleeping bag and do my show about inmates. You know, like, that's all I wanted to do. I just remember, like, bolting out of there, like, with no idea where I'm going, like, middle of the night, just kind of like, it's funny, too, because I'm just like, I always wonder about this, like, you know, I think we, at least for men, I think most men, they, you know, you watch that action movie or the disaster movie, mm-hmm. where, like, when everybody's humble in the beginning, like, they're all high school students or whatever, and then the comet hits, and, like, suddenly they become, like supermen. They're just, like, this massive bravery comes out. I think, I know that everyone wants to believe that the mass, that's that. I'm not that. Like, I learned in that moment, I'm like, when the comet hits, I am running down the street screaming. I'm throwing shirts behind me. I'm knocking old women down. Like I'm doing whatever I need to survive. I feel bad for Jen. I wonder and worry. Jen will be with me. I'll be like, hurry up! You know, like I'm not waiting! You know? And it's kind of depressing, because I literally have bolted out of there, and I'm like, the brave person probably would have stayed and waited this out or done something, but I'm like, I have no plan. I'm actually putting myself in weird ways I feel like in more danger. I'm like, I'm just going to run out into the middle of the night and find somewhere to be in New York.
Oh, dear.
So ridiculous.
That's so sad when we discover that about ourselves.
It was the worst. It was the worst. And, you know, I called a little postscript on that. I called the director of the theater, you know, and yelled at him. Once I got to a hotel, I called him and woke him up at 4 in the morning. He has a kid, so he appreciated it immensely. I was just like, hey. Or actually, he called me. That's how it actually worked out. He called me because the guy had called him.
Oh, dear.
And he was like, Sean, how's everything going? And I'm like, everything's going bad.
Well, I'm proud of you for telling the truth. That's great.
At that point, I was very upset. I was staying in, like, there's this horrible hotel in New York City across from Grand Central Station. Uh-huh. Or not Grand Central, across from Penn Station, called the Penn Hotel.
Uh-huh.
It's ridiculous. It's like, it's in Midtown Manhattan, and the rooms cost, like, I think I got a room that night that I showed up for, like, $60.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and, like, the doors look like they're from a boat, like, from an old, like, boat
in the 50s. Like, they're big admiral, like, doors, and it's, like, you know you're basically, like, stepping on bed bugs the minute you open the
door. Oh, my God.
It's grotesque. It's completely grotesque. So that's where I was staying, and I just got off the phone with Jen, because, of course, although I am not the brave person who wants to run and scream, what I do need comfort, like, nonstop. So well, I called her immediately, and I'm like, I'm in a cab, and I'm getting tracked by Irish mobsters, and I'm going to stay in this hotel, you know? And I think Jen actually ended up, I didn't even know what to do. I think she set up the hotel through, like, the computer. So I get off the phone, and then, yeah, he calls, and he's like, how's everything going? Not bad. It's real bad. And he's just like, yeah, Declan just called me, and he said that, he was like, were there people in the theater? I'm like, maybe. I ran away. Well, you, and, like, and now I'm feeling also embarrassed and angry at the same time. It's like, I ran away. I didn't stay to see your theater. I don't have to stay there and protect it. You should protect it. Just completely devolving. And oh, then,
sad.
It was horrible. It was absolutely, absolutely horrible.
So did any of your Irish heritage play in? Did it help you at all? Like, do you think maybe had the Irish mob shown up, you could have been like, hey, I'm one of you.
Well, I mean, yeah, I would have turned on the same accent I'm using now. Like, like hey, I've met some Irish. My grandma talks like this. It's almost Scottish. Some horrible, they'd be completely insulted.
Blue stars, yeah, yellow moons.
Just like, Jesus. How about we just have a pint? You know, like, I don't know what you say to an Irish mobster what to calm them. You know, I'm just, like, you like Colin Firth, you know, like.
I like all the Colins. Colin Farrell, Colin.
Which one's which?
Colin Farrell is the one with the temper.
He's the young, good-looking guy?
Yes, Colin Firth is the older, good-looking guy.
He's not good-looking, though.
Colin Firth?
Colin Firth is the one that women always say is good-looking, but if they ever met him in real life, no.
Really? You think it's all charisma?
He's the one who's in, like, all the Jane Austen stuff.
Yes,
right?
That's right.
Yeah, no. Colin Firth. Way. You see Colin Firth every day. You see Colin Firth when you go to Hy-Vee right now.
You think that Colin Firth does not have the magnetism?
He's on screen. He's really big.
Well,
and he's
yes,
charming
but, okay.
And funny and
listen,
he smiles.
No slight on Kevin James, but Kevin James is on the screen and women are not falling all over for him. Like, and God love you, Kevin James. I hope you have a long and industrial career. But you know what I'm saying? Like, Colin Firth. There's got to be, he has to have a musk.
He's more talented than Kevin James.
There must be a musk of some kind.
He also doesn't make mall cop.
Some pheromones. Yeah, but they're by the grace of God. Like, Colin Firth is one movie away from making mall
but
cop.
But
God, like, aren't we all
sad for Colin Firth?
We are all one step away from the mall cop of our lives. Do you know what I mean? Like, mall cop, let's not slam on mall cop. Because mall cop is like, that's like, we're walking a tightrope. And on one end, one side of the tightrope is mall cop, and on the other side is the rest of our lives. So, like,
oh my God!
Oh yes!
I wish you were Colin Firth's agent. I would love to see that meeting where Colin Firth came in and he was like, "Well, I've just done Sense and Sensibility. What's next?" And you're like, "Mall cop."
Mall cop could be.
Mall cop is probably next.
No, but that's the motivator, right? You're like, "Dear God, what can I do to avoid mall cop? I better brush up on my Jane Austen, Toot Sweet."
He's basically adapting it himself at that point.
I better
point.
Attract some ladies. I better double down on some Axe body
the thing,
spray.
Though, is and comedians. I mean, Kevin James is a comedian, though. Like, I don't think women throw themselves at Will. I just don't think comedians have the same type of magnetism.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? They're a jester.
Yeah, that's true.
Class Clown never got girls.
That's
they liked
true.
Him. He got to hang around them. Uh-huh. I remember middle school.
Yeah.
The class clown right. got to hang out with the pretty girls and make them laugh, but he didn't get to make out with them.
Trying to remember who the class clowns were. I was the class clown in my high school, and so I think I edged out any other would-be class clowns. I was like, get thee behind me, so-called clown, clown, quote unquote. You think you're a clown? I'm gonna show you some clown, son. I believe that was the attitude I was throwing.
That was the one that you took at them.
That was the one. Yeah, I was very intimidating. I'm sure.
Well, the Norwegian in you.
That's the, right.
That
that's right.
Harsh Norwegian.
I think the braces helped in
you
the
braces too.
Oh, I had braces. I had my exciting Sally Jesse Raphael glasses.
Wow. In so was high. The so was the comedy like totally to take attention away?
Oh,
was it defensive?
Well, oh, of course. Isn't that why anyone's funny in junior high? Like it's a,
I guess so.
I heard a psychiatrist once say that your personality is simply a series of defense mechanisms you invented to get out of childhood alive. which I think is great.
Pretty apt.
Yeah. So you like this? Is why you develop this? You develop your. How do you get through high school or middle school?
That's interesting. I shapeshifted a lot.
Like that's how you did it?
Yeah. You know, like I was never really straight up class clown. Like, mm-hmm. but I would move in between groups. You know, like what social group I belonged to. Uh-huh. Like I was friends with the bad kids, but I never actually hung out with the bad kids.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I was also friends with the jocks and I played some sports, but I wasn't really a full member of any group. Like
sure.
During lunch I would be the guy who would be moving from table to table. Like I could bounce from table to table.
Sure.
Usually with an invitation.
Uh-huh.
Usually be like, "Hey Lewis, get over here," and I'd come over and talk to them for a little bit and like, "Oh, they're asking me to go over there." And
sure. So well liked. You went that way. The sort of the likable but not offensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like only
like Kevin
there
James.
Enough. Probably a
Kevin
lot like
James.
I look a
likeable.
Little like Kevin James. All of this is
you
depressing.
Don't look like Kevin James.
I've been told that. I had an artistic director say that to me.
That artistic director.
That's how he sent an email to another.
He
theater.
Was trying to motivate you out of the mall cop of
no,
what was happening.
He sent an email to another theater that was casting and looking for something there, and he introduced me to them as a young Kevin James.
You look nothing like Kevin James to me.
I don't know. I got a big forehead. He's got a big forehead. I'm a little bit thinner than him.
I mean,
slightly.
God love Kevin. I'm sure Kevin James is the third person
care.
Listening to our podcast, but I
he
mean,
doesn't care. He's about to open.
He could buy and
the
sell
boom.
The both of us. He could buy and sell the both of us.
Yeah.
He is the king of
Which
Queens.
Kind of amazing. That's I find some of that sometimes inspirational. I'm like Kevin James did it.
That's true.
I'm not apologizing to him either.
You shouldn't. Why should you?
But it's interesting. So you had the Sally Jesse Raphael glasses.
I did.
Like colored? Like were they like?
Oh yeah, the they pink? Were pink on the top and blue on the bottom. That way I could, they would match everything
did you
I
pick
owned.
Them?
Oh, I did. I did
Why
pick them.
Why would you pick them?
Because I was insane. I was 13
like,
years
did,
old.
Did,
I was like, these are cool.
Did
well,
you have a
like,
sense of irony when you picked them? Or
no,
you
well,
think-
you know, like you develop. It's just, it's the defense mechanism, right? Like people are going to label you. And so one way to deal with the label is to cling to it and embrace it, right? And like I got labeled really early on as weird. Right, I was the weird girl because
what'd you do?
Because I'm smart and funny.
No. What,
no.
Like, did you like have a frog collection or the weird?
No,
weird
because
comes
I would
with
say
an
like
event.
I no, because no, it would. I would say it's because I think it's because I genuinely might be a little weird. Like I would say like weird things.
Like what?
Oh, like
what's weird at 13? Everything at 13.
I'm talking about like in first grade. I'd be like, they'd be like, "Oh, do you like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?" And I'd be like. Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of something weird to say, but I would say like some like weird like I would try like it'd be like a funny
retort or
yeah response. Retort or something. And then like there's a time like I would say something to someone that I thought was funny, and sometimes they would laugh and that was great. But sometimes I would say the joke, and you could see like the blinds pull on their eyes. You could see like the roller shade pull down,
yeah.
And they're like. Oh, and they kind of retreat
yeah,
a little bit.
You're that person.
Oh, you are, and then it would come like, oh, you're weird. I see, you're the weird one, and I'd be like, ugh. And I used to. Here's my snappy comeback. This explains it, Sean. Here's my snappy comeback. When I was in elementary school, someone called me weird. I would respond with, well, who are you to define normalcy?
This is in, like, first grade?
This was in, like, fourth grade. That's
yeah,
what I would say.
You were digging yourself a grave.
You see what I'm saying? Like, this is what I'm saying.
Are you going to teach your kids not to do that? Or is that something you encourage? Or, I mean,
well,
how does that
I
work
know.
With parenting? Is it kind of, like, free-for-all?
God,
or?
No. I don't have any idea. I'm like a C-plus parent. I'm
you
just,
said this last time.
It's true. It's true.
You
that's
were making
about,
tacos and you were calling yourself a C-plus
I am a C-plus parent.
What makes you a C-plus parent?
They're alive, so yay for me.
That's
they're
positive.
Still, they're
I mean,
still,
that's,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's
so you
not, I'm not failing.
A. That, so you got to do it like how you grade at a college or high school, right? So like, you're already at an A.
Oh,
so
that's
we're
how you go.
We're starting at A. Well, they're
okay.
alive.
Yeah, they are alive.
Right.
And,
so that's
and,
an A for now.
Uh huh.
So
I'm saying I'm a C-plus parent because like, they'll be like, "Mom, I want granola bars for dinner," and I'll be like, "Ugh, fine."
And you give me granola bars.
Just fine.
Do you give him a knife and fork with it?
You know, just, no, worse. I'll be like, why don't you watch some TV
oh,
and
nice.
Eat this granola bar? Like,
and
just,
what do you do while they're watching TV?
Every other thing. every other thing.
Like housework that you need to get done?
Or emails, or try to, God forbid, write a play.
You have a crazy life, though. I mean, we should say, for people that are listening, Megan is a mother of two kids.
Two.
Has a husband.
I do have one.
I mean, that you're with. Yes. I mean, I think that's a... That helps. That's indeterminate anymore, is if people have a husband at home or not.
It's true.
You teach at multiple colleges.
Yeah.
And you have a playwriting career.
Yeah. That's true.
You do music, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's just kind of like, oh, eat your granola bars. I'm going to go, like, buy a bunch of kittens. Or, like, I'm going to go hoard.
I'm going to go to the casino.
Or that, exactly. And we live close to a casino. It is different than that.
That would be, like, D-plus parenting. You know what I mean? Like,
that close to D-plus?
No, that would... I would say leaving your kids to go to the casino would be, like, F-plus, D-minus.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. But, like... So I would, I'm a better parent than that, but I'm not great. Like you hear about parents, like I have friends who are like, I was talking to a woman and she's like, yeah, I never let my kids watch TV. And we always do we do art projects on the weekends and they've learned to spell their name by the age of three. And I was like, that's really amazing and not anything that I am doing.
But see, the art project thing, that's cool.
That is very cool.
I would say the not watching TV, there's just, it's funny. I wonder, I'd either be brilliant at this or I would be a really bad parent. Because in my mind, I'm like, I don't want my kid to get killed at school. Like, I remember school.
Sure.
I sometimes wonder with some parents I'll meet. You know, because I also feel like I know a lot of, like, neo-liberal hippie parents, which would be me, you know, like, in terms of most of the things I believe. But it is these types of things of, like, oh, we just go on nature walks, and we make things that we made this beautiful, like, origami thing on the weekend. I'm like, that's amazing that your kid can do that. People are going to kill him. You know, like, that kid's going to come in from the weekend, and they're all going to be like, hey, did you see the Hawkeye game? I watched the Hawkeye game with my dad. It's like, I made a paper crane. And they're going to kill him. I remember that stuff, man. Like, I remember having to go home to mom and being like, we can't do any cool stuff this weekend. You got to leave me alone. Like, I grew up basically for, like, an early part with my mom being a single mother. And then she married my stepfather, who was a good amount older and had two much older kids. So he was amazing for me. But I think also in some ways was like, I did this. Like, like stupid can figure out things on his own. Like that was often a name that I would have, was just like, stupid can go in the living room for the weekend and he can figure out if he wants to eat Doritos and watch pro wrestling or if he wants to like have a life. And I would always choose the Doritos and the pro wrestling.
Well, naturally.
Where my mom, you know, was a great mom and like completely, I always feel guilt about this in ways, like so devoted to like whatever I needed and wanted and everything. That, you know, she would make plans and things of like, let's go to the children's museum and we'll do this. And I would do that a few times. And then I remember going to school and I remember those conversations of like, Lewis, what'd you do this weekend? And I'm like, well, my mother and I went down and we saw the new paleontological exhibit. And before I even finished the words, I got smacked.
Yeah.
Like, it was just kind of like, this guy's an idiot. I'd be like, I don't understand. I saw dinosaurs.
I wonder how much of that, though, like, I was really aghast when I had a son because of the way that boys, because my memory of how boys treated each other in school was all this, like, you know, you have to come correct or I'm going to, you know, smack you in the teeth. Like, there was all this kind of stuff. And I felt like there was more room, at least in my world, there was more room for girls to sort of, like, you could be the nerdy girl and the only consequence is, like, you don't, you know, have dates or anything. But no one's going to physically assault you. That was my experience.
There's not the fear of death.
Yeah, there's not the fear of death, just sort of gentle ostracization.
You didn't have, like, the mean girl Or is that just that starts happening later?
I think that comes in junior high, high school is when the
junior
mean girl
awful
stuff.
For everybody.
Yeah,
though.
Everyone has a hard time in junior high.
Junior high is really awful.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, too. You know, it's interesting, like, because our friend Martin, he's got a daughter.
He does.
Our friend Jim has a daughter.
Uh-huh.
And both of them, I was talking, and they're our age. And I was talking to both of them yesterday. And they were talking about how happy and relieved they were when they found out they were having a daughter.
Mm.
Which seems so different than ages past, where, mm-hmm. like, you know, of course you wanted a son, play football, carry on your name, where they were like, thank God. Like, thank God I don't have to deal with, like, the nonsense of, like, who runs the house.
And, well,
like,
because there's this, like, there's, I think it is hard for boys, because there's all this, I think as a girl, this is what the triumph of feminism, of second wave feminism, is that, I mean, there are a lot more options for girls in terms of expressing their identity. Like, you can wear little skirts and bows in your hair, but or you can also play with trucks and jeans, mm-hmm. and it's fine. But as a boy, one of the things that the work I think feminism still has left to do is liberate the boys in that regard. Like, boys, like, well, you're going to play with trucks or, you know, fuck you. Like, there's no... It's really hard to be, like, the boy who that's wants to... That's
interesting. You see feminism as something that liberates both sexes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I always find it an interesting thing. It should. Well, no, because, I mean, in terms of... We've talked about this before, too, of, like, how people feel... Women, especially, there's a lot of younger women who feel really distanced from the even the term feminist.
Yes, the F word. Right?
Yeah, it's really off-putting. As a liberal man, I'm like, yeah, totally cool, kind of understand things from, like, really my understanding of feminism goes to books I had to read about, like, the 70s. Like, after that, I'm kind of like, I don't really know. Things got better, I think.
Maybe.
I know there's still inequality, but at least you can burn garments or, like, right. something else that's happened. Right. I just remember when we were in grad school, I used to get really angry when feminism was brought up, but it was never brought up by the women in class. All of my male classmates, I went to school for playwriting, all my male classmates would call themselves feminists,
mm-hmm.
but always be in this weird way. Like, they would write a play and, or like, we say we would have seen like we'll call him Mr. J. Like, you know, Mr. J was one of my classmates. Well, we saw his play last week, and, like, not a good female character, at, like all just, like, having sex to destroy men and, like, the temptress. Naturally. You know, like, very much stereotypical. And then the very next week, we see another play, and the first thing they'll say is, like, as a feminist, I see your play. And this would be what Mr. J would say. Uh-huh. He would preface, and I would always get really confused. Like, I wouldn't even be able to comment the rest of the night. Right. I would just be trapped in, like, Mr. J's a feminist? Like, what does that even
right.
mean? Like, does that mean I can be, like, a black nationalist? Like, like, if he can be a feminist, like, can I be anything, like, can right, I right. be anything I want? And my problem that I always had with it is I wondered, and maybe I'm backwards on this. I mean, this could be interesting, is, like, I always wondered if it was a level of, I never felt like I could be a feminist. I
just because feel, you're a man? Because
I'm a man.
Huh.
So it felt to me the same as, like, me deciding I'm going to be a black Israelite.
Huh.
You know, is I'm like, if it's like if I showed up next to black Israelites in New York, we're like, I agree with everything you're saying. Like,
uh-huh.
give me my King Tut hat and let's yell at people as they walk past. Right? As I felt like as a man, I felt like I could agree with feminism. I could try and support it as much.
Uh-huh.
But that because I'm a man, I couldn't actually be a feminist.
Oh, that's too bad. I don't agree with that at all.
Most people don't agree with me.
I think
you're
making me feminist. Well, it's like, okay, we have established in this podcast that we are both white people, and yet we can advocate for non-discrimination based on race, right? Like, we could totally, like, if you were to march... Not that anyone marches anymore, but if you were to march in some kind of, like, civil rights parade, or not parade, but you know what I'm saying, a demonstration, if you're going to march in a civil rights demonstration, nobody would be like, what's that guy doing there? They'd be like, yay, good for you, Sean. Or take gay rights, right? Like, I am a heterosexual woman, and yet nobody's looking askance at me when I say, yay to marriage equality. Yay.
But I guess the difference for me is that, like, I would never call myself, like, a gay liberationist or like a Black Panther.
Sure. Well,
and
but
it may
I don't
be
think
that I look
feminism
as a group more than I should.
Yeah, cuz I don't know if feminism is the same as Black Pantherism. Like that's its own thing.
I can't wait until that talk in the Playwrights Workshop.
That's true.
As a Black Pantherist.
As a Black Pantherist, I find
well, it's interesting. Maybe it is the way of the grouping, you know? Cuz for me it was always a level of
cuz there's different kinds of feminism. Right? There's different kinds of feminists. Like, not all feminists agree with one another.
I'm also cynical. That probably helps me not not aligned with
anyone. Well, no, what you have is a finely tuned bullshit detector. Like, you can't write a play about I wanted the woman who, you know, sleeps with the men to destroy them and then turn around and be like, it's okay because I'm a feminist. It's like, no, you're an asshole.
Or, like, I remember we had one classmate who said, and it was another thing that frustrated me. It was a man, and he was like, basically, he was equating that because he's gay, he's automatically a feminist.
Oh, that's not true at all.
And I was, and that was something where I was like, I don't get that, because I also feel like it's a cop out and can be subversively destructive
to call yourself a feminist.
I think for men sometimes, I guess because of what I was seeing, and I also remember like the guys I knew in college who would call themselves a feminist, right? And then I would see the way that they actually behave with women, or how they would talk with me when we'd be alone. And I was like, no, you totally like to subjugate women. Like, I think you agree with the ideas of equality. But the truth is, I feel like this is one of the bigger problems I think we get into as a country a lot, is I think everyone agrees everything should be equal and fair until it starts to affect them.
That's right. Well, you know, and that's right. There's a great book. We're coming towards close to the end of our podcast. So let me recommend a book. Yeah, that's right. Let me recommend a book to the world. I think her name is Susan Douglas is her name, I think. But anyway, what's the name of that book? Is it Enlightened Sexism? Is that the name of the book? I think so. But anyway, where she talks about how we've all, the culture today has broadly internalized the, like, feminism sort of won the argument, like we all agree. But now, sexism is sort of spurting out in these, like, oh, men and women are equal now, therefore I can watch The Bachelorette and feel okay with it, or I can watch Gossip Girl. And be okay with it, or
I understand the subjugation of the work, so it's okay.
Therefore, it's okay because we won the war. Like, we're men and women are equal now. Yay!
It's just my choice. I actually have freedom in my choice to see myself.
I have choices. This choice idea. The feminism is about choices, which I think is malarkey. I don't think feminism is about choices at all. I want choices. I go to the grocery store. I'll give you some choices. Like, what kind of cereal am I going to get? It's my choice because I'm a feminist. Like, that's malarkey. I don't believe in that at all. Choice. I hate the word choice. Stupid.
We've come across that too. I guess we
tapped a vein now. Spurting my rage.
We've opened that one
choice.
Up. It's good. We've covered who we are.
Who we are.
Our childhoods. Mm-hmm. Irishness.
Our Irishness.
And feminism.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Good for us. Yeah. And the ways that we cope through junior high.
Yeah, we started to touch on those.
This is, yeah.
I feel like junior high is like for every human being is its own epic. I feel like if anyone, if people cared about books anymore.
That's right.
You know,
like, the Odyssey, the junior high Odyssey.
Well, I just think every child who wasn't popular.
But even the popular kids, nobody thinks they were popular. Like, nobody was like, I was so popular in eighth grade. Oh, no.
I think they totally do. I see them all the time when I go back to my hometown.
You think they were popular, but I don't think they ever thought that they were popular. I think they thought, well, so-and-so was more popular than me, because everyone secretly knows how horrible they are. Right? Like, in eighth grade, like, everyone secretly, because it's all about me and my acne.
And you've been around everybody forever.
Yeah.
I just always wonder, like, we had this girl I went to high school with who was, like, I'd say the most popular girl in our school. And had been forever.
Uh-huh.
Named Misty Clymer.
Misty.
Like Miss Clymer. Like, like, parents were definitely foreseeing a XXX career for this girl.
Yeah.
But she went on to be Miss South Carolina. And there was a big, you can Google her. There was this huge, like, thing of the Miss America contest, like, 5 or 6 years ago that she was part of this big controversy because she had come in second, but then I think there was some sex scandal for the person who came in first, so she became the Miss South Carolina, and it was this whole nonsense. But she's one who I always look at, and I'm like, she must have known throughout school up to that point also that, like, she had always been kind of popular.
Right, right.
Do you know what I mean? That, like, maybe that's my own, like, frustration and wish. I mean, I think not being popular helps you go into the arts.
Yes. Sure.
Self-hate. I think self-hate's a good motivator for the arts. I said this in, I think, a rehearsal the other day, and everyone looked at me like I was insane. There was a part of me that got both sad and angry, because I was like, I'm not alone in this. I believe you all hate yourself. They kept going, and I kept hearing things like stage managers going like, no, Sean, we're going to work on you learning to love yourself. And I'm like, I'm going to kill you.
Please, please don't love yourself. Please don't. The self-hating Sean is much more colorful and fun, as far as I'm concerned. I vote for the self-hating Sean.
Well, it's a more true
Sean. Send your money now.
Yeah.
Send your dollars now to support the self-hatred for Sean.
Yeah. I got a lot of it to sell.
Let's wrap it up. Thanks for listening, moms.
Yeah. I'll send you more.
Hopefully, we all have been helped to understand.
Yeah. We started, I think today, our subject, we learn to understand each other.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Peace out, Black Panthers. Peace out.